Hello, Career Cohort. Thanks for tuning in. I'm your host, Emily Wong, founder of Words of Distinction. We talk about tools for achieving career success, inspirational stories about overcoming career and life challenges, and how we can recalibrate our perspective to better enjoy the journey forward. My guest today is Sophie Wade. Sophie is an international keynote speaker, author of Empathy Works, and an authority on future of work issues. Sophie's the host of the Transforming Work podcast and founder of FlexCell Network. Sophie's executive advisory work and transformative workshops help companies adapt and update their work environments and attract, engage, and retain their multi-generational and distributed talent. Welcome, Sophie. Thanks so much for spending time with us today.
Thank you so much, Emily, for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, Sophie, you wrote a book called Empathy Works, among other books, but today we're talking about empathy. And I'd love to know what inspired you to write this book.
Really, it's part of my journey looking and focusing on and working and speaking in this sort of subject area, the future of work. And it actually sort of bubbled up as being a solution to future of work issues that I was being asked to help with at companies and speak about. And there's sort of three areas. One was to do with leadership and new styles of leadership, which were much more sort of leading from within, is how I put it to begin with. There was also miscommunications, misunderstandings between generations. And then the last pillar was decentralized workforce, basically effectively remote working. And particularly on the intergenerational piece of it, which at the time was millennials that everybody was complaining about, I really sort of said, well, okay, let me just try and understand what's going on here. And I read lots of research and I really tried to put myself in their shoes to really try and get a sense of what's going on. Why are there so many complaints? Because they're all the same. And that was where empathy came, the sort of my focus on empathy, because I was like, if you put yourself in other people's shoes, if they're remote working, if you're a leader and you're trying to understand your team and lead them better. And so it really became, it was the solution and not the sort of the headliner. And then as we sort of went through that, and then COVID happened and the pandemic happened, and then empathy became looked at in a very different way and really understood more deeply as human connection, human understanding. And so, you know, as we were going through the pandemic and the future of work then sort of arrived with all the technology implementations, I believe that it was really important to put down in writing what I'd learned, about empathy and how important this sort of human-centric way of looking at the world was, and to be able to help people, as I knew when we'd be coming out of the pandemic, that we need to look at things in a different way, because in the future of work, which is really what the book's about, we need to be really focusing on talent and human beings and try to understand each other.
Yeah. And you raise a really good point with the pandemic. There's just that new level of separation, right? Even though we can see each other, we're not together. And that presents challenges that for Gen Z that we'll talk about a little bit later. I wanted to get into first, I know you give workshops, and mm-hmm. I'd love to kind of be a fly on the wall with you, and you do these workshops for bridging generational gaps. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to know what some of the ways are that you suggest teams can improve cross-generational collaboration, because a lot of the people who listen to this podcast are in that, mm-hmm. they're in those executive roles, and they, you know, they do want to know how to connect. So I'd love to hear some of your thoughts.
Sure. So one, an aha moment that I have that I share in different ways, which was really a pivotal moment for me, was understanding how different people's interpretation are of simple phrases. And it happened at a conference, which I was attending, I was speaking at it as well, but I was in the audience, and the the guy on the stage whose conference was actually running the conference, he was a boomer, and he was speaking to a millennial in the audience, and he said, say the next thing that comes into your mind. And the millennial guy was like, yeah, sure. He said, lifelong employment. And the millennial's answer was, of course I'll be working all my life. And I was like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Because, of course, that's not how I would interpret that. And I've also said this subsequently to, you know, a couple of years ago, I said it to another millennial who said exactly the same thing that he did before she knew. And so that really made me understand that our context, how we grew up, the situation when we're growing up, the circumstances, how people interpret different things, say hard work. Hard work is another phrase that I go for it. So hard work to a boomer or Gen Xer would be long hours at the office, you know, and that's what the picture in your mind is. Whereas for a Gen Z, for example, it may be 40 hours, but working very intensively and getting exactly the same results, but working in an extremely focused way, using different tools, maybe using, you know, project management tools or whatever it might be, that they're able to potentially create the same outcome, but hard work meaning something very different. Now, obviously, the problem becomes if somebody who has an interpretation of long hours as being hard work, that if they then are judging somebody who does 40 hours, they're not going to promote them or believe that they're working hard, even if they're, you know, without a real adjustment and mindset shift in terms of what, you know, what the outcomes are, really focusing on outcomes. So that's one of the sort of games that we play in terms of really trying to get inside someone's head and recognizing that empathy, which is really about sort of what is it that you mean? And, you know, the listening really actively and with intention. And then also sort of saying, so what did you mean by that? Mm-hmm. And really trying to restate in my words, because what you said and what I heard are often very different things. And that's where a lot of the misunderstanding comes from.
You know, that's really interesting, because I wonder, you know, you and I both have children around the same age. I guess they're young adults. They're not necessarily children anymore. But I even saw, I see the way students will look at work and they can kind of get rid of that busy work. And what you just said about working more intensely in that 40 hours, that could be surprising, because I think a lot of people think of people from Gen Z as doing a lot of things at the same time and not necessarily working more efficiently, which is implied if they're actually working very focused in 40 hours. They're actually saying, you know what, this is busy work. This doesn't need to be done in order for me to get to this point.
Yes, and that's the whole point of the word hack, which I think is more of a millennial, originally a millennial word. What really, for me, what a hack is a shortcut to doing things the old, laborious, tedious way that it was done before, and trying to work how to use technology, particularly to do it in a more efficient way. So, you know, the end result can be the same. Now, there are also, there can be gaps in what's done, or some things may not be specified, but that's the idea is that we have been doing things in the past, sometimes in a very convoluted way, based on the technology we had at the time, based on the process that was originally set up. It doesn't mean it was the best way to do it, or certainly may not be the best way to do it now that we have lots of other ways that we can do things. And so the redesigning of the how is often being done by younger generations and, you know, finding better, quicker, more effective ways to do things. And that's sometimes that can meet with a lot of resistance, because, you know, we've been doing it like this for, you know, however long. You know, that's not the point. The point is, like, how can we do this effectively going forward?
Yes. Yeah. So, Sophie, I was thinking too, you know, and I've had this conversation, we both raised children to be, you know, speak their mind and speak up. And I remember at the dinner table, you know, as these as the tables started to turn, right, and there was a, I was seeing more and more pushback, more questioning, especially during a very politically tumultuous era, and and realizing, oh my gosh, okay, my kid's going to be smarter than I am, or you know, he's going to have these opinions, and he's going to keep asking. If I don't give the right answer, why do you think that, Mom? He's going to keep pushing, and he's going to keep pushing. And as uncomfortable as that was, I have to say it made me a better person. I think it made me smarter in terms of forming an opinion. And it certainly made me smarter about sharing an opinion if I can't back it up. And the reason I'm bringing this part up, Sophie, is that I feel like, you know, I was in a business situation in my corporate life where we moved our headquarters, so we brought in a lot of new blood. And there were a lot of questions of, why do you do it like this? And it was not coming from a, you know, an offensive place. It was true curiosity. But the people who have done it this way, it can be uncomfortable. So I think, you know, what you're talking about is where they will have these wonderful ideas. It's really great to let those ideas in.
For sure. And I will say, you know, I was really irritating when I was at school, at high school, because I was always asking why. So
good
that's
for
something
you.
That I certainly couldn't push back against my kids saying that, because I taught that, I'd done it myself.
Yeah.
And it is really irritating sometimes. Like, enough, because I said so. No, I gave up on the I said so, you know, a long time ago. And yes, I think the pushback, partly it is fascinating to me in that we have a lot of leaders who are uncomfortable or not happy with some of the pushback they get with the asking why, although they are teaching their kids to say why.
Yes.
But they expect those people to have come out of other families and not to be asking the same kind of questions that they've taught their own kids to ask. So that's sort of the kind of like, okay, you know, do as I say, but not as I do when it's in my company. I think, you know, really the way I try and present it always is, whatever we've done in the past, things are different now. The future of work is here. It's driven by technology and some societal changes. And we need to do things differently. Things are, you know, the nature of work has changed. It's much less linear. It's much more teamwork. It's much more complex and multi-layered and multi-dimensional and faster. And we cannot be working the same ways that we were. And we need everybody's input, including the youngest generation, who are the most facile with technology. Mm-hmm. And so accepting and encouraging them to speak up, which you can't sort of necessarily put in a box, like, okay, you can talk about this stuff, but you can't talk about that stuff. But that why or how we're going to do things and designing it with everybody's input is a process that we do need to go through. And we need to be sort of thinking things through as we come out of the pandemic and we're launching into or creating, designing the new way forward. That is, you know, having input from everybody with all the different perspectives that they bring, I do think it's extremely valuable.
I agree. One of the things that's a big deal now are the ERGs, the employee resource groups, for listeners who aren't familiar with that term. And I think they're fantastic. I think there was a need for those, for people who need to form a group of peers or kind of up and down the organization, for people who don't necessarily see themselves reflected in the top leadership roles. I think they're very important. I also think it's really important to avoid creating silos so if you have a lot of these ERGs, but they're focused on people just like you, to balance that out, maybe there are ERGs that are cross-generational. And I did have a client who was millennial, and she saw the need for this. So she created this multi-generational ERG. Are you seeing that in your work as well?
I haven't seen that, but I, I'm always encouraging mentoring and a cross-generational mentoring, so that it ends up being bi-directional. The older, more seasoned, more experienced employees are often not as facile or as comfortable with different technologies, and they can, in a safe pairing, be asking some of the questions like, you know, can you show me how to use that app, or, yes, or you know, what's a cool thing that you just saw that could be help, you know, they help me, that's interesting. Or likewise, the experience of the older person within the organization to help them understand the different experiences, you know, how the company works, and help them understand more about how that particular department, or maybe it could be across the organization, which is sort of helpful for sort of integrating a younger employee with more of a network,
yeah,
and more understanding and more relationships across a company. So mentoring, I do find, is extremely beneficial for bridging those gaps and bridging those understanding and creating more respectful understanding between generations, because sometimes the lack of understanding leads to a lack of respect, and that can be, you know, ends up being part of the additional challenges that can then sort of result in projects or teams that don't work as effectively as they might.
Yeah, one of the things in your book that I really liked, Sophie, was where you were talking about building that trust before there's a crisis. So that it's already established, because if you're in a crisis situation and you have to come together, that's not the time you're going to build that trust and get things done, right?
Yes, because it is the oxytocin. They found that stress is an oxytocin inhibitor, which is something which helps generate trust. Mm-hmm. And so if the stress causes less trusting relationships or undermines the trust in relationship, yes, it absolutely needs to be there. So the focus on enabling these relationships and spending time to nurture and deepen relationships at work. People don't have to be friends, but they do need to understand each other and have common ground or have found common ground in order to be able to work effectively together. Even though those aren't sort of work to do with, you know, actually working, those are incredibly important to actually have teamwork and, you know, projects be accomplished effectively together.
Right. And the way to that trust is, as you said, that cross up and down mentoring. You know, Gen Z has not had the opportunity, like the rest of us have, to have built relationships the way they were meant to be in person initially. Now things are changing. People are in a hybrid workspace. My son's in an internship where he's there 100% of the time. But I do know that remote work, if we could kind of move on to that a little bit too, and how that affects Gen Z. I've talked to a number of Gen Zs, and their biggest concern is because they're, so, you know, interns come in and there's not necessarily, in a lot of companies, there's not necessarily an effort to really integrate them into the company or integrate them into the culture. And they get their projects, they work on their projects, they might finish their projects in a couple of days and then they have nothing, and then they can't make those connections. And that's where the seasoned employees can come in and give them guidance. And I think if you layer that challenge within integrating them, on top of that, you've got the remote issue. It's a missed opportunity for the employees, the interns, because they're not getting that career development. But it's also a miss on the companies, because those interns are generally, I don't have, you know, formal numbers on this, but I would say they're pretty eager to learn and contribute, and they're raring to go. They've got all this energy. And so, you know, that's a real opportunity too.
I see the weighting of responsibility on the company. And this is where it comes down again to the how. when interns typically came into a company, or you know, the youngest employees were onboarded, it was just sort of, there was very little that was actually purposefully done about it. It was like, okay, they came in, they sat down at the desk, and somebody at some point dumped something on their desk.
Yeah.
But they were there, so they're kind of like getting the experience. You know, as you said, they often, there were many moments when they were just sitting there doing nothing, and maybe they chatted to other interns, and maybe they got the experience, or you know, were able to wander around and maybe, you know, connect with somebody in the cafeteria. But a lot of that wasn't that much better than if they were completely remote. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they don't even have the chance of that.
Right.
I do see the responsibility being the company to sort of say, okay, if we're going to have interns, like, what do we need to do with them? Mm-hmm. And be intentional about these different steps, what we're doing, how we're connecting with them, and, you know, mark out the blocks of time, what they can be doing. You know, it's not that hard, but it just needs to be designed.
Right.
Okay, so there are, you know, 10 managers that they can talk to. So, you know, we imagine that they should have 3 days of work there, 3 days of worth of work in a week. They might have more than that, and then they can, you know, they can work later. But you know, on that day they could have an hour with this person, and that they can block out with managers so they can connect with them, talk to them. But all of that just needs to be organized.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, everybody has these, you know, things that they need to do. But engaging with interns and having purposeful dialogue with them and finding out who these people are and what they're interested in, like, that's incredibly beneficial to the company. So, yes, it's a huge lost opportunity. And so I don't think it's hard to fix. It just needs to – it is a question of sort of saying, okay, so we actually never did that. But they were in the office, so it was kind of like – it was fine. Mm-hmm. But now we actually – if whether they're in the office or they're not in the office, we can actually do it differently and have it be a much more beneficial for both the employee or the intern and the company too.
So are you seeing when you go to these workshops – I'm assuming it's a couple of days and you go in and you sit down with these different groups. Do you pair off some older generations with Gen Z and have them kind of break down the barriers, and then you see kind of aha moments among these older generation employees when you bring this to them?
It depends. I mean, it's interesting that in many cases there isn't the setup to try and have the cross-generational, because there isn't the feeling of being comfortable in that. Mm. It's more about, let's just say at a manager level, assuming that the older generation involved is the manager or higher level, and then the junior people.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's more about giving them tools in the different communication situations that they may be in. Empathy habits, you know, what to do, the kind of things to say, the kind of things, because I think it goes back to that, you know, uncertainty. I'm not comfortable in this particular situation. Mm-hmm. So they don't want to be put in to a situation that they're not going, they don't believe that they're going to handle very well.
You mean they as the older employees? Is that what you're referring to, or just anybody?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Let's just say it's anybody, but it might be the older people.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Because they have to show vulnerability too, right?
Yes. And in a workshop situation. So, I mean, there are lots of things you can do in a workshop situation to just break down barriers and have people be more comfortable and just sort of messing around and you know, all those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
But mentoring, you know, can set up some of that change in mindset. A lot of it is a shift in mindset in terms of just understanding people.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the key thing that I go down to, which isn't about a particular intergenerational interaction. It's much more about shifting someone's mindset to kind of like, well, who is Emily?
Mm-hmm.
And how does she see the world? Because I know that she doesn't have the same view about this, but why doesn't she?
Mm-hmm.
What is it that I don't know that she knows? Or, you know, is it some data point or a story that she can tell me that will help me connect with her about that? That's more important just generally. And so I focus on that type of the sort of mindset shift and then the empathy habits and practices that can enable all of those different conversations to go better, no matter who you're talking to, because it goes to inclusion, it goes to all kinds of diversity. It doesn't have to be across generations. It's across, you know, it really goes to race and gender and all these
yeah.
other aspects where people are not being inclusive. They don't necessarily have the tools to connect in a more meaningful way to have a better relationship personally and then professionally as well.
Yeah, yeah. So I think what it comes down to is for when companies are really looking at whether or not they're going to invest in these employees and even in these internships, interns, to bring them back. If they're superstars, you want them to come back. I mean, you might want them to come back full time. So you want to be able to tap into right. those skills that they bring, right? So, mm-hmm. you know, I can't remember who to attribute this to, but there was somebody who asked, which is worse, risking developing an employee to the point where they leave or not developing an employee and have them stay? So I think that this part of development is developing that empathy, even though it's considered a soft skill, which is still very, mm-hmm. very important.
Yeah, sure.
And by the way, you know, it's a myth that we don't put soft skills on a resume. We actually do. Mm. Yeah,
yes,
we
for sure.
encourage that mm-hmm. it, as long as it's in a statement that's has a proof point. So if you're saying that you're just empathetic, that doesn't really mean anything to the recruiter. But if mm-hmm. you talk about the fact that you were able to bring teams from across the organization and you were able to build consensus with some proof points mm-hmm. and data points of what that resulted in, whether it's change, whether it's a new technology system, whatever that is, that's proof of empathy mm-hmm. or great communication.
Yes. And I do certainly have a strong opinion about whether you should invest in employees because for sure mm-hmm. they're going to leave. And that is mm-hmm. the assumption. And that's okay. For one, it is extraordinarily hard still and will continue to be for a while to move people within organizations. I was just at the Talent Connect Summit of LinkedIn, and this is something that organizations, recognizing that the linear continuous compounding career is gone, particularly when you have big organizations, to try and work out the sort of horizontal and diagonal and vertical path that each person may make, you know, how to move them within organizations. I spend quite a bit of time talking to different people, trying to understand, you know, the challenges that continue to exist. No matter how much mm-hmm. you know about it, it's still hard to do. And I was talking to a gentleman who was actually in the process of trying to do his fourth move, but he had sort of learned how to do it, and he was just about to do his next interview to try and move over to a different area. And it's very, very hard to do. So that's one thing. And so what that really means is that 20% of employees do not feel supported by their boss or their organization in that next career move within the organization, mm-hmm. which means that 80% are effectively saying, I'm going to have to leave in order to, yeah. that's going to be the easiest way to pursue my career. So that's terrible. So obviously it needs addressing. It is much more complicated. But I have come across three different companies specifically in terms of how they look at people as being on loan to them. Mm. Like, we are part of their career journey and we want to be investing in them and they will invest in our organization. But if they're really good, they're going to move on to right. something else, you know, or move somewhere else from mm-hmm. my team, right? I also have to, if it's a big organization, if I'm going to help people, help someone go over to a different department, I have to be comfortable to lose a rising right. star because that's what they may need to do. So it's taking a really different perspective on it in terms of understanding that we don't have this 30-year career somewhere. And so that means I have to be willing to invest in somebody and know that they're going to leave. And then if they do leave and I've really helped them onto that next career step out of my department to another company, then that's going to help them recommend, you know, somebody really good working for me in my department or in my company. And that's sort of the positive cycle way of looking at it.
They become ambassadors for you, for your company or your department.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there was a McKinsey report that just came out about, I guess Microsoft did an internal survey. You might know about this, Sophie. They found that 52% of Gen Z employees were considering leaving their jobs. And that's pretty significant considering that Gen Z was born in 1995 forward. So they haven't really been in that role very since very recently. But they also found that 73% said that they would stay. 73% of Gen Zers would stay if they were if there were an easier way to change roles internally. So I think that's really significant. Speaks to what you're talking about.
Right. And fundamentally, where that goes to is that Gen Z are even more aware than millennials that they have no job security. And if I'm a Gen Z and I have no job security, I know that the only way that I'm going to stay competitive and have a chance of having income security, you know, having some kind of financial stability is if I continue to grow and upskill and my career path continues to move upwards. So it's almost a survival response that if you're not going to help me, if I can't move within the organization, I need to move. And I want to move and I want to explore and I want to get new experiences. And so if there's a possibility, so that talent mobility becomes incredibly important not to lose that person who doesn't necessarily want to leave at all. We all know that it's a huge thing to actually, you know, try and get a whole new community of people and friends at a new organization. So there's a lot of lost opportunity for all kinds of really understandable legacy reasons about, you know, what changing the whole way that we look at and think about and develop careers, which can really be supported in terms of helping the young person understand, you know, how to manage and be tracking their, you know, their own career, and then, you know, talking to not just their manager, but other managers to which needs to be intentional, obviously, if they're working more remotely. You know, all those things are cyclical. But, you know, that becomes a way to retain people for sure if they understand that you're trying to move them within the organization, because there are lots of opportunities within an organization to get different experiences, which could be horizontal as well as vertical and diagonal.
Yeah, really good point. Sophie, was there anything else that you wanted to touch on before we end?
Just to say that, you know, there was a very interesting, we talked about it before we started, was this very interesting new serious focus on skills, much less about careers and specific schools and really about how people are doing their jobs. Because, you know, I typically use the example of PR, like how PR is done 10 years ago is so radically different to how it's done now. Technology, how you get it out, how you can't control the words because, you know, it gets controlled out there. And so when we're not focusing on the job title, we're focusing on what somebody's actually able to do and thinking about fewer chronological resumes and much more about the, you know, the functions, the skills and how people are sort of really focusing on, because most people don't actually know what their top skills are. I mean, I'm always asking people, I'm like, yeah, what are your top three or five skills? And I'm like, and it's hard, but we need to start thinking like that, because that's how we're going to be most effective in organization, how people are going to kind of go, okay, Sophie, so that's, you know what you're strong at, and you know, so let's try and orient you towards that, because then you're going to do your best work.
You're absolutely right. When I start my intake meetings with my clients to write their resumes, it starts with, what's your special sauce? What are your superpowers? And, you know, at the executive level, they kind of know, but they need help articulating it. But some people will say, oh, I don't know. I haven't thought about that. But that's what we're here for, right? We're here to pull that out, because everybody's got amazing skills. Okay, so Sophie, thank you so much for coming. I just wanted to give you an opportunity to share, how can people reach you and how can they find your book?
Thank you so much, Emily. So my website, for my personal website, it's sophiewade.com. My company website is flexcellnetwork.com. But my book, Empathy Works, The Key to Competitive Advantage in the New Era of Work, is available online and in bookstores. And I also have a podcast myself, which is Transforming Work, which is really chatting with all different types of people about how people are looking at things differently and really trying to work out new ways to be thinking about and doing things as we move forward. Because it's complicated. And to be reassuring, I'll say we're all in this mess together.
And I recommend your podcast. I've listened to you. You're a wonderful host.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, thank you very much for this interview. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Career Cohort. I'm Emily Wong. You can find all my podcasts and blog posts at wordsofdistinction.net. And if you'd like to chat about how I can help you define the next step in your career and achieve your goals, head on over to the same website and book a time on my calendar for a free consult. In the meantime, please be sure to share, subscribe, rate, and review so we can continue to bring you great content.